You're listening to The Republican Professor, and I'm your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. We're back talking about Chevron deference, and we're going to jump right into it, my friends. I'm so excited. Let's take a look at where we left off from last time. Like I said, we are going to do section 3, 4, and 5 today. And I'm on page 845. Let's review how to get there. I'm sharing my screen. Go to Google Scholar. Here we go. Go to case law. Go to federal courts, then Chevron versus Natural Resource Defense Council. It's a 1984 Supreme Court decision. There it is. We're going to scroll down to 845. How do we know what page? You got to look for this. See that? It's right there in the text. And when you print it out, it's usually on the side. There's 843, 844. I'm in this, I finished the second section. So we're on number three, Roman numeral three. In the 1950s and 60s, Congress enacted a series of statutes designed to encourage and to assist the states in curtailing air pollution. The Clean Air Amendments of 1970 sharply increased federal authority and responsibility. And now we're on 846, you can see right there. In the continuing effort to combat air pollution, but continued to assign primary responsibility for assuring air quality to the several states. Section 109 of the 1970 amendments directed the EPA to promulgate National Ambient Air Quality Standards, NAAQS, NAAQS, and Section 110 directed the states to develop plans, SIPs, state implementation plans, to implement the standards, I think it's state implementation. To implement the standards within specific deadlines. In addition, Section 111 provided that major new sources of pollution would be required to conform to technology-based performance standards. The EPA was directed to publish a list of categories of sources of pollution and to establish new source performance standards for each. Section 111E prohibited the operation of any new source in violation of a performance standard. Notice the word source. Notice the word source. This word right here is what this whole dispute is about. Source. It's not defined. Section 111A defined the terms that are to be used in setting and enforcing standards of performance for new stationary sources. There's the word. It provided, for purposes of this section, the term stationary source means any building, structure, facility or installation which emits or may emit any air pollutant. Notice this word or. You find that to be funny? I do. I do. Because a facility sounds like a bubble concept, like the whole place. But a structure or a building, that could be a shed. That could be one air duct in a facility. So you see, it's ambiguous. What do you mean, the whole or the parts? It's not defined adequately. Congress did not define it. They got this through, they got it through on the vote, they went on to other things. What else was going on in 1970? Vietnam. There's all sorts of stuff going on in 1970. Congress was busy. '70 amendments that de that definition was not only applicable to the NSP standards. Oh, sorry, the NSPS program required by Section 111, but also was made applicable to a requirement of Section 110 that each state implementation plan contain a procedure for reviewing the location of any proposed new source and preventing its construction if it would preclude the attainment or maintenance of national air quality standards. Okay, so if this word source is an entire facility, or if it's a part of a facility, that has a lot to do with, you're talking about preventing construction on a new source. How do you measure? What's the baseline of measuring what source definition you're talking about in order to stay within these standards and continue construction so that you can be in business? You can't be in business if you don't do the construction. In due course, the EPA promulgated the NAAQS approved SIPs and adopted detailed regulations governing the NSPSs for various categories of equipment. 847 we're on. In one of its programs, the EPA used a plant-wide definition of the term. How convenient. Stationary source. In 1974, it issued NSPSs for the non-ferrous smelting industry that provided that the standards would not apply to the modification of major smelting units if their increased emissions were offset by reductions in other portions of the same plant. Okay. Well, EPA is playing fast and loose. We've got a plant-wide definition of the term stationary source sometimes when it suits them. Non-attainment. In 1970, legislation provided for the attainment of primary NAAQS by 1975. In many areas of the country, particularly the most industrialized states, the statutory goals were not attained. In 1976, the 94th Congress was confronted with this fundamental problem, as well as many others respecting pollution control. As always in this area, the legislative struggle was basically, what is that legislative struggle? Was basically between interests seeking strict schemes and interests. It was basically between the struggle was between interests seeking strict schemes to reduce pollution rapidly to eliminate its social costs and interests advancing the economic concern that strict streams would retard, their word, would retard industrial development with attaining attendant social costs. So you got interests for strict schemes to reduce pollution rapidly and interests advancing economic concerns. The 94th Congress. Confronting these competing interests, was unable to agree on what response was in the public interest. Legislative proposals to deal with non-attainment failed to command the necessary consensus. They dropped the ball. Congress dropped the ball. I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, what do you expect from 535 people, many of whom do not know each other or like each other, even if they do know each other? What do you expect? There's probably lots of things they're not going to agree on in complicated legislation like this, and they could not agree on defining this term correctly. So they pass the statute with some unclear language, and then they leave everybody else to deal with it. In light of this situation, gonna share my screen again. In light of this situation, EPA published an emissions offset. Okay, notice. In light of this situation, what situation? Congress failed to be clear. Now, I mean, look, this is something you want to think about here on a deeper level. Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution of the United States says all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist in the Senate and the House of Representatives. Okay, scroll down to Section 8. Section 8. Well, Congress has these herein granted powers. They're right here. Okay. These are the guardrails. And then there's some restrictions. There are certain things they can't do. You know? But this is Congress's job. It's Congress's job. Let me ask you a question, true or false? Is the EPA in Congress? Is the EPA in the Senate? No. Is the EPA in the House of Representatives? No. So why would the EPA have any legislative powers under the Constitution? The answer is they don't. But we're in a situation where the Congress fails. And next sentence, in light of this situation, what situation? Congress failing in its job to legislate correctly and clearly. So who gets in the game? The EPA. Where's the EPA? The EPA is in the executive branch, which is in Article 2. The executive power shall be vested in a president. The EPA is underneath the president and is supposed to be responsive entirely to the president. It's in the executive branch. So why is the president publishing a ruling? What is this? Well, let's read about it. In light of the situation, the EPA published an emissions offset interpretive ruling in December of 1976. And this is the Federal Register. In other words, they're adding to the Federal Register to fill the gap, as respondents put it, until Congress acted. What do you mean until Congress act? So you're doing Congress's job until Congress does its job. Well, that's not authorized under the Constitution, but that's what they're doing practically, and they're going to see if they can get away with it. And how are they going to get away with it? Because the American people are like, huh? What? Oh, yeah, it sounds right to me. Yeah. Sounds great. Yeah. The ruling stated that it was intended to address the issue of whether and to what extent, whether and to what extent national air quality standards established under the Clean Air Act may restrict or prohibit growth of new or expanded stationary pollution sources. In general, the ruling provided that a major new source may locate in an area with air quality worse than a national standard only if stringent conditions can be met. Their ruling gave primary emphasis to the rapid attainment of the state statute's environmental goals. Consistent with that emphasis, the construction of every new source in non-attainment areas had to meet the lowest achievable emission rate under the current state of the art for that type of facility. The 1976 ruling did not, however, explicitly or adopt or reject the bubble concept at issue, that is for the stationary source, preferring an entire facility definition for stationary source. Number four, the Clean Air Act's amendments of 1977 are a lengthy and detailed, technical and complex and comprehensive response to a major social issue. Wow, what could possibly go wrong if Congress screwed that up? What could possibly go wrong? And I'm not saying they screwed it up. I'm just saying. You got 535 people trying to agree about a coercive solution to a major social issue. Good luck. Good luck. And it involves a lot of money. Part D of Title I of the amended Act, 42 U.S. Code, Section 7501 through 7508 expressly deals with non-attainment areas. The focal point of this controversy is one phrase in that portion of the amendments. Basically, the statute required each state in non-attainment area to prepare and obtain approval of a new SIP by July 1, 1979. In the interim, those states were required to comply with the EPA's ruling, interpretive ruling of December 21, 1976. The deadline for attainment of the primary NAAQS was extended until December 31, 1982, and in some cases until December 31, 1987. But the SIPs were required to contain a number of provisions designed to achieve the goals as expeditiously as possible. We're on page 850, see? Right here, 850. Most significantly for our purposes, the statute provided that each plan shall require permits for the construction and operation of new or modified major stationary sources in accordance with Section 1073. Okay, there's the word at issue, major stationary sources. And you're talking about permits being required. Oh, joy. What could possibly go wrong if you don't define the term stationary source? A permit for what? And how many permits do you need? Is each little shack or little, pipe a stationary source? Or is it the entire facility, the bubble of all of those little pipes and shacks and all the other stuff that go into it? It doesn't say. Well, EPA said a bubble concept before. There's no rejection so far of a bubble concept. Before issuing a permit, Section 173 requires the state agency to determine that there will be sufficient emissions reductions in the region to offset the emissions from the new source. Ah, there we go again. What's the new source? Is it that one piece of pipe? That one? Or is it the whole thing? Is it the part or is it the whole? Makes a big difference. You can see why people are fighting about this. And also to allow for reasonable further progress toward attainment, or that the increased emissions will not exceed an allowance for growth established pursuant to Section 172(b)(5). Two, the applicant to certify that his other sources, well, there you go. There's another use of the term source, and we still don't know what the damn thing means in the state are in compliance with the SIP. Three, the agency determine that the applicable SIP is not otherwise being implemented, and four, the proposed source, there it is again, to comply with the lowest achievable emission rate. Okay, you got three uses of the word source in four of these conditions for before issuing a permit. This is required. Okay, what's required? Source, source, source. But you haven't defined it. Congress hasn't defined it. 1977 amendments contain no specific reference to the bubble concept, nor do they contain a specific definition of the term stationary source. Although they didn't disturb the prior usage, they did not disturb the definition of stationary source in Section 111A3, applicable by the terms of the Act of the NSPS program. Section 302J, however, defines the term major stationary source as follows. Except as otherwise expressly provided, the terms major stationary source, major emission-emitting facility mean any stationary facility or, oh my gosh, they did it again. Or, you see this? Or source of air pollutants, which directly emits or has the potential to emit, wow, 100 tons per year or more of any air pollutant, including any major emitting facility or source of fugitive emissions of any such pollutant as defined by rule by the administrator. That's the administrator of the EPA. Okay, so it's still ambiguous because the word potential to emit, I mean, what do you mean by potential to emit, which directly or has potential 100 tons per year or more of any air pollutant? Okay. You still haven't said if it's the part or the whole, though. Why not just say we mean, instead of saying major emitting facility, instead of saying it's the facility, say it's not the major facility. It's any part of a facility. Pick a side. Is it whole or part? They don't ever say. That's why there's this fight. The legislative history of the portion of the 1977 amendments. What's legislative history? Guys, legislative history, do you know what it is? It's the debates in Congress, as if that's going to help. Hey, if Congress didn't say it in the statute, these debates are not going to help at all, because one guy saying his opinion on the floor of the House or the Senate, that's not law. That's part of the debating process. That's a legislative history. But so I they're going to the legislative history here, but it's not going to be helpful. The legislative we're in section five. The legislative history of the portion of the 1977 amendments dealing with non-attainment areas does not contain any specific comment on the bubble concept or the question whether a plant-wide definition of stationary source is permissible under the permit program. So, in other words, it didn't even that issue of trying to clarify that doesn't even seem to be on their radar. It does, however, plainly disclose that in the permit program, Congress sought to accommodate the conflict between the economic interest in permitting capital improvements to continue and the environmental interest in improving air quality. So there were, of course, they're aware of the two sides in this conflict because Congress is elected by people on both sides. Of course, they know that there's two sides, but that doesn't help. It doesn't. Congress's job is to provide an answer by a majority vote, and they didn't do that here on this conflict. And so they're going to kick it over to the president. Okay. Well, at least that's what hap that's what the president ends up doing, is saying, "Oh, this is my job now." Indeed, the House committee report identified the economic interest as one of the two main purposes of the section of the bill. Section 117 of the bill, adopted during full committee markup, establishes a new Section 127 of the Clean Air Act. The section has two main purposes. One, to allow reasonable economic growth to continue in an area while making reasonable further progress to assure attainment of the standards by a fixed date. And two, to allow, I'm on page 852 now, states greater flexibility for the former purpose than the EPA's present interpretive regulations afford. The new provision allows states with non-attainment areas to pursue one of two options. First, the state may proceed under EPA's present trade-off or offset ruling. The administrator is authorized, moreover, to modify or amend that ruling in accordance with the intent and purposes of this statute. So Congress thinks it's delegating to the executive branch part of its legislative power. That's fascinating. And it's under this language of the administrator is authorized. That's called delegation, legislative delegation. The state's second option would be to revise its implementation plan in accordance with this new provision. Okay. The portion of the Senate committee report dealing with non-attainment areas, and again, we're still in the legislative history, which I don't think is that helpful. States generally that it was intended to supersede the EPA administrative approach and that expansion should be permitted if a state could demonstrate that these facilities can be accommodated within its overall plan to provide for attainment of air quality standards. The Senate report notes the value of case-by-case review of each new or modified major source of pollution. That's still so unclear, though. Major source of pollution that seeks to locate in a region exceeding an ambient standard, explaining that such a review requires matching reductions from existing sources against emissions expected from the new source. Well, you got to define what you mean by source in order to assure the introduction of the new source will not prevent attainment of the applicable standard by the stationary deadline, statutory deadline. This description of a case-by-case approach to plant additions, which emphasizes the net consequences of the construction or modification of a new source, as well as its impact on the overall achievement of the national standards, was not, however, addressed to the precise issue raised by these cases. Senator Muskie made the following remarks, and you're always going to be, just quoting one senator, but senators don't make law by themselves. So, I mean, that's why I say it's not really that helpful, but I should note, this is just his view. Like, I should note that the test for determining whether a new or modified source is subject to the EPA interpretive regulation and to the permit requirements of the revised implementation plans under the conference bill is whether the source will emit a pollutant into an area which is exceeding a national ambient air quality standard for that pollutant or precursor. Thus, a new source is still subject to such requirements as lowest achievable emission rate, even if it is constructed as a replacement for an older facility, resulting in a net reduction from a previous emission levels. A source, including an existing facility ordered to convert to coal, is subject to all the non-attainment requirements as a modified source if it makes any physical change which increases the amount of air pollutant for which the standards in the area are exceeded. Okay. Now, next time we're going to get into section 6 and 7, and that's 7 is where we talk about the statutory language and a little bit of the legislative history, and we get done next time. So I appreciate you hanging with me on this. It is so important that you learn and appreciate how to define terms and that you define them accurately and clearly. Accurately and clearly. Any logic textbook that's worth its weight will have a major section on definitions of terms. In the textbook that I used for a long time, Patrick Hurley's Concise Introduction to Logic, that was in section 2, chapter 2. Section 2.5 had criteria for good definitions, at least the best you can. And I think it's chapter 5 of Irving Copy has the same kind of material, but it's a standard fare in logic textbooks. I encourage you to teach your children, if you are a homeschooler, to teach your children the importance of language, the importance of clear, precise definitions. It will serve them well. I'll see you next time.